We're live.
Okay, welcome everyone. Thank you for joining us today at this meeting of the Lane Transit District Board of Directors. We'll do a quick roll call. Sorry, I just navigated away. Let's see here. We'll start with Caitlin Vargas.
Here.
Joshua Scove.
Here.
Kate Reed. I see her there. Stephen Yet.
Over here.
Great. And let's see what else we got. I think Emily Secord was not able to join us. And Dawn Norden.
Yeah. Emily said she might possibly be able to join by phone, but it was uncertain.
Okay. Sounds good. And Dawn, are you able to hear us?
I can hear you.
Okay. I can hear you too.
Okay.
Great. And then Kate, just making sure you can hear us too. Okay, I think, did she just disappear? Maybe she's trying to reconnect. Okay, well, let's go ahead and go into our schedule. I do not have any comments for this week. AJ, did you have any comments as general manager?
I do not.
Great. Next, we have any announcements or additions to the agenda? Okay, hearing none, we'll go ahead and move on to the next item, which is the Franklin Boulevard Opportunity Zone Corridor Project Build Grant, and Jennifer Zankowski is presenting. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Great, thanks. Good to see everybody. So, wanted to give you an update of what is happening. There are two projects that are roadway projects that are being developed for Franklin Boulevard. The Springfield project is in the segment of Glenwood that started back in 2013. And phase one of that project is what we see out today at McVeigh. Eugene has been working on a project. They started their planning phase in 2019, and they're considering improvements between I-5 and Alder Street. Both projects have similar goals of improving safety along Franklin Boulevard, supporting the economic development and land use planning that's been happening in that corridor, enhancing transit and adding bike and pedestrian facilities in that corridor. LTD has been participating with both of these communities throughout the project development of, on both sides. And so in 2017, we were awarded through legislation $5 million that we're holding, the state is holding in lottery bond resources. And at that time of that award, we had talked about using those dollars to invest in our MX system. And so we have been having conversations with Eugene as they were developing the scope of their roadway project of using those resources and trying to figure out what how we could use those resources for improving transit services through that segment. And so the Franklin Corridor, as you all know, it's the spine of our system, carries more people than any other segment of the corridor. It is a very critical component for regional connectivity. This, as it's set up, the functionality of it right now and as it operates, there are segments in Eugene where we have a dedicated guideway in one direction, and there are some segments that are in both directions. Because of how that is configured, we're limited in the ability of our to be able to operate more than 10-minute frequency through that area. As over time, as ridership has grown, we've noticed that there is overcrowding and more congestion on the road. It is impacting our travel times. And so some of the goals of the project for at least on the Eugene side is would make improvements to that by providing a dedicated guideway in both directions from Walnut Station to our Dad's Gate Station. So we have been talking with Eugene about this. And more recently, in the past, I guess, year or two, both communities have talked about leveraging resources together to build out the project for both corridors. And AJ and Kate, y'all went to DC last year on the United Front trip, and in part to talk about this. So back in December, we had a conversation with both of the communities about applying for a build grant. And what we decided in that conversation was that Eugene and Springfield would be the applicants, and they were asking LTD to support their project as a contributing agency. So moving forward to where we're at today, both communities are working really hard to put together that application. It's due May 11th, and there haven't been any adjustments to the deadline for that grant because it was an act of Congress, and so it would require an act of Congress to change that. So they're working towards that May 11th deadline, and what they're asking is that we agree in principle of contributing that $5 million lottery bond that we have to help support this grant application as local match. Both communities are also putting in match dollars. And I guess I provided a lot of information, so maybe I will leave it there and see if there's any questions or specifics that anyone wants to talk about in particular.
Yes, thank you, Jennifer. Are there any questions or comments that people would like to make? And I don't have my participant screen up, so please go ahead and just physically raise your hand. Yes, Josh.
Great, thank you, Carl, and thank you, Jennifer, for this. This was awesome to read through. I mean, I have followed many different facets of this over time, but I just want to say this is exciting to see all of this material together. And really represents the sort of deliberate, when you look at the change plans for the corridor, the sort of deliberate densification of the built environment and of economic activity and multimodal coordination that we really want transit to be at the heart of. So I found this totally inspiring to go through these materials. I also really want to emphasize the clear opportunity to help the community, both cities and the university, with the 7.5-minute service. Anyone who uses MX in that corridor knows how incredibly used it is for much of the day. And I think having that even more frequent service will, it won't just relieve congestion, it'll sort of encourage more people to become frequent transit riders in that corridor, I think. I also want to say that, and I guess what I really hadn't done was really understood the extent of the public and private and university investment throughout that corridor. And I realize some of this is only tangential to MX, but a lot of it actually just validates the case for bus rapid transit being one of those other things that gives momentum to investment in a corridor. So just the overall picture here, I think, is really important from a transit perspective. I have a couple of questions that, and I may have missed this in the materials, but I don't think this stuff was here. Maybe you can just help me with understanding the implications specifically for LTD, because those other comments are sort of more the bigger picture. I'm remembering that with the roundabouts, in particular, I think the easternmost roundabout in Glenwood, we ended up having to tear out an entire MX station because of the spacing and sort of the way the 60-foot buses could move through the corridor. I don't remember exactly how to say that. I guess I'm curious how, are we going to make sure that that is not happening again here? Are we sort of ensuring that if it does have to happen, that we are not sort of taking it on the chin as the transit agency for those additional costs? And then also, I guess I want to ask that not just for the additional Glenwood roundabouts, but also for whatever changes have to make on Franklin, just because they're pretty substantial. And I understand that sometimes we have to replace infrastructure, but just on behalf of taxpayers, I want to make sure that we're not just carelessly ripping out perfectly good concrete that's, you know, a decade old or less. That's really the spirit of my question.
Okay.
Can I answer that, Jennifer?
Go ahead.
Josh, these are really, really good points. I think there's a lot of lessons learned from that. The fact that the upfront coordination for these types of projects needs to be done completely different than it was done on the roundabouts that you mentioned at the McBay station. We learned that we do not want to be a separate construction manager, that we feel that LTD's needs need to be addressed up front. I will say that Kate was involved in some of the discussions that I had early on. And the city of Eugene, after the conversation that happened at DC, we've met with the city of Eugene and the city of Springfield to express our desires for safety to be our first priority. And the fact that we want dollars to be used in the most efficient manner. This portion of today's will only cover the fact that we support both projects in concept and the application of these funds, and that we are willing to be a partner. There will be a separate agreement that comes to you before the board of directors that much more closely communicates what you're saying today. The fact that LTD is right now contributing the largest local share means that we're expecting a strong voice in this discussion, that our design requirements for safety and efficiency be of the utmost priority prior to us releasing any funds for these projects. And we hope to continue to partner with both local jurisdictions to even get more money. So this is not the end of what our efforts at LTD will be. I want to continue to be a strong partner on both of these projects that align, but I do agree with you that we do not want to repeat the McVay station in which we had to come back and do some retrofitting, or that we have some concerns about how that operation went. So I think those were good lessons learned, and we won't repeat those again.
Thanks. Just so everyone knows, I have my participant screen up, so I see people's hands up. But before I get to those, I'm going to have Tom go, and then the next will be Kate, and then Stephen.
I'm just adding some context. Actually, the original intent was, and we got a Connect Oregon grant to do this, was to really reclaim as much of the McVay station infrastructure as possible to be reused. And that's, I mean, some of that's happened in the redo. But a point to understand is that as we go through this and the two cities, assuming they get the money to make the improvements, that's going to be the status of all the stations that are affected by this project, is that we would seek to, recycle as much of the federal asset as possible in the new design.
Sorry, I had to unmute. Thanks, Tom. And then Kate, and then Stephen, and then Josh.
Yeah, thank you. And sorry, I popped on a little late. I had a call that I was on. And so I don't know if Jennifer mentioned much about the United Front trip and the focus that we had. Was that mentioned at all? Should I repeat it?
I just mentioned that you're all, that you participated, not so much the discussion.
Okay. So we did spend, that was one of our actually largest topics on our United Front trip, was this joint jurisdiction build grant. And when we met with both FTA, which was just AJ and I, we didn't have other jurisdictions meeting with FTA, but with DOT, we met with a number of people, and there were so many high points in this build grant that were connected to transit, that there, it seemed that there was no way to not participate in the build grant process at some level. And as Tom mentioned, we do have federal assets that we are slated with maintaining and investing. Once we receive the money is there. So we need to do something with our assets as this other development's going on around it. But I do wanna say that on our United Front trip, we had both Tom Boyat and Matthew Rodriguez in a number of the meetings, as well as the mayors of Eugene and Springfield and our county commissioner that was on the trip, really talking about how cool it is that we're all participating in this at a joint level. And one of the things we talked about the most was the roundabouts and off, you know, out of meeting conversations that we had together, and then in the meeting conversations, there are a number of us taking notes about anytime a roundabout would get mentioned, and just making sure that we're on top of that and that we have an equitable voice in the conversation. So just wanted to give a little more background and context to this application and adoption.
Thank you, Kate. Next we have Stephen and then Josh.
Thanks, but my answer was just questions. I see the politics of what's going on. I'm good, thanks.
Thanks, Stephen. Josh, go ahead.
Sorry, muted. I think actually Jennifer addressed most of what I was saying, or AJ rather addressed most of what I was asking about. I guess I just want to make sure that we are expressing that sort of concern about being responsible with the dollars now, so we don't get much farther down the road. By the time we discovered it, with the issue with McVeigh Station, it was, you know, way too late to do anything about it. And so I'm just making sure that we are kind of hearing at this level. It looks bad for the agency to have spent federal dollars very recently and then have to kind of tear up the infrastructure associated with those dollars. So it's not, I mean, I appreciate AJ's comments about safety. Of course, safety is prioritized here, and the multimodal safety wins from these investments were really clear in the materials that Jennifer sent around. But it's that fiscal piece I want to make sure that we're flagging here, but it sounds like we are ahead of the game this time. So I'm good. I think this is great.
Thanks, Josh. Hey, Don, was that you raising your hand? Okay. Any other comments before? I was going to make a quick comment unless there's someone else. Okay, I see head shakes. So I just want to say I fully support this project. I think not only is it it's a very important route or a corridor for LTD, and I think the safety element is really important as well. I'm glad that this also, making this match also makes our voice important, I think, and I have confidence it will be heard as we develop it. And so I will be open to taking a motion from someone. Oh, AJ, go ahead.
I just want to say before you take a motion, not saying that this would change, but I think it's important to give credit where credit is due. So the although today is more about providing support for the project, I would do want to say that Rob Zakel of BEST, who we're not taking public comment today, did reach out to us to communicate his support for you guys approving this. He reminded me, which he's correct, that BEST was instrumental in communicating to our state legislators their support for this LTD receiving the $5 million that we do have. This is something, a corridor that's important to them, and it's important to them. And they did agree that at some point they will submit a letter of support to not only LTD, but both jurisdictions, the city of Springfield and city of Eugene, so that they know that there's local transit advocacy support for this improvement. So I just wanted you guys to know that, since he's not giving public testimony and you guys would have heard that BEST was instrumental in LTD even having the opportunity to participate in this project.
Thank you for that, AJ. And so I will entertain a motion. Go ahead, Josh.
Oh, yeah, sorry, just before a motion, just a really quick clarification for the public record. Could someone just very briefly explain the implications for LTD of promising lottery bond resources and where $5 million in lottery bond resources would otherwise show up in our budget, you know, what sort of restrictions it would have, if any, or if it just goes straight to the general fund. It might be nice to know, just know those implications.
And no, those would not go to the general fund. They are restricted dollars that are specifically obligated to LTD to make MX improvements. So if we did not use them on this corridor, we would have to have another project in which MX improvements were needed to do that. This is the most viable project that we have, because as Jennifer said in the beginning, is the corridor with that has the busiest need. And since we built it in 2007, we've outgrown it. So this is our greatest need of MX. We could choose a different one, but at this point, we would recommend to the board that this is a project that's very worthy for us to engage in.
So you're saying lottery bond resources that LTD gets have to go to support the MX system?
Not regular lottery bonds. These 5 million have to go, as spelled out by our legislators, for MX investments or improvements. So these 5 million are restricted for that sole purpose.
Great. That's very helpful. Okay. Well then, Carl, may I move adoption?
You may, absolutely may.
All right, I move adoption of LTD resolution number 2020-04-29-023. Hereby resolved that the LTD Board of Directors adopts a resolution in support of the Franklin Boulevard corridor. Do I need to read all of those bullet points?
That's okay. I think we'll state it as stated in the on page 3 of the agenda.
Got it. Yes.
Great. Do I have a second?
So I'll second.
Don has seconded it. So it was moved by Josh, seconded by Don. We'll do a roll call vote. Caitlin Vargas.
Aye.
Josh Gove.
Aye.
Don Norton.
Aye.
Kate Reed.
Aye.
And Stephen Yett.
Abstain.
Abstained. Okay. And as Carl Ye, I also vote aye as well. So great. So the motion passes. Thank you very much, everyone, for that discussion. Thank you, staff, for making that presentation to us. And we look forward to getting more updates on that project as it goes along. Okay, let's move on to the next agenda item, which is the delegated authority regarding labor negotiations. AJ, do you have a presentation for us, or just some brief words about that?
We are working, no presentations, but I do have a brief explanation. We are working in a very unusual environment, everybody knows, during COVID-19. And we know that there's going to be a lot of conversations about the workplace that involved our union partners. It's just important to restate the fact that, do have the authority, if you guys so approve it, that I will continue to engage the union in multiple conversations that could result in or be deemed negotiations that would ultimately any formal agreement would come to the board for approval, but I, will have that lead authority. It's important to clarify this because, the union does need to have a key point of contact, and with so much that has changed during COVID-19, it's important that we communicate to the public and to the union leaders that, the best way we can be doing is working together, myself and them, to reach resolutions that are needed for our employees. So it's just a point of clarification.
Excellent. Any questions or comments from people on the board? No. Yeah. Then I'll just go ahead and mention I think it's a good idea as AJ is our general manager and sole employee reporting to the board. I think it's good to have to be very clear that she is the contact to work with the ATU leadership. And with that being said, would anyone like to make a motion?
I propose that I move adoption for LTD resolution number 2020-04-29-024. I hereby resolve the LTD Board of Directors adopts a resolution restating the delegation of authority to the general manager for all matters related to labor matters.
Excellent. So Dawn has made the motion. Oh, was that Caitlin?
I second, yeah.
Yep, great. So moved by Dawn, seconded by Caitlin. All those in favor, please signify by, oh, sorry. I'm still used to that. Okay, roll call vote. Next, first, Caitlin Vargas.
Aye.
Josh Scove.
Aye.
Kate Reed.
Aye.
Don Norton.
Aye.
Stephen Yet.
Aye.
And Carl Yeh, myself, I vote aye as well. So motion passes. Thank you very much, everyone. And good luck to you, AJ, with all labor matter negotiations.
Thank you.
Next, we have a ridership and operations update. This is our featured and main part of our weekly special meetings. Tom, is that you?
Yeah, featured. Wow. That's great.
No pressure.
I'm going to share the screen here. And here we go. Let me get up to the top and start the show. Okay. So these are charts that you are used to seeing by now, I'm sure, showing total boardings by route category, the MX portion of ridership, and then total boardings by day and boardings after 8:30. One thing you might notice is that at the end of the bar charts on the bottom of this page, we have a new color. The green color represents the new configuration of service we started operating on Monday. That service is generally speaking, well, just to give you the technical details, 29 hours of additional service per day. But the key thing is that it's the same level of service for 6 days, so Monday through Saturday. And most of that additional hours of service comes from increased MX frequency. So you can see, I wouldn't draw a lot of strong conclusions, but both Monday and Tuesday ridership has been higher than the previous I say couple weeks, and ridership after 8:30 was also higher. So just some things to look at there. You've also seen these charts. These are charts showing, remember we started managing loads, when was that? On April 4th. And trying to keep MX or 60-foot buses down to 20 passengers and our 40-foot buses at over, not over 15. And so you can see that we've been pretty effective in managing the 60-foot buses, not a lot of trips over 20. There are some trips on the 40-foot buses where there's more than 15. We looked into this, and what we found is that for the most part, those trips that have more than 20 only have them for a couple of stops and are largely concentrated around the Eugene station. So you can imagine our service going in and out, and there's going to be higher loads as you get in and higher loads as you're going out. And again, our observations are that those things have dissipated within a few blocks of the station. So let's see, the next one we're looking at here, this is the ride source service. And as we've shown before, the bottom chart there is the trip, the number of trips taken has really fallen off, but very similar pattern to what we've seen with our regular service. The call volume also is down as well. We're gonna watch that uptick at the end of the week on call volumes just to see what's going on with that. Just to give you a sense of what You know, we've talked about how the demand for ride source service has gone down, and this just gives you a sense of the staffing. On total, it's gone from 104 staff during regular operations down to 28 that are just kind of managing the low level of demand we have now. So the other thing that we included in the memo.
Tom, can you back up to that slide?
Sure.
Just so the board understands. So we have a contract with MTM. That's our provider for our some of our specialized services through RideSource. Their decision, these decisions about staffing are related to their operations. We only pay them for actual service they produce. So these decisions were made independently to make sure that they can meet our service demands. But we don't really get, we don't make any these decisions. They make them independently. I just wanted to make sure that LTD is not involved in any of this. This is them making these decisions as our contractor.
Right. Thanks, AJ. So you saw in your packet, we had a new table to look at. We've been trying to look at what the changes have been between the same period that we're in now and a year ago. And so what you're looking at here are a list of the top 10 fixed route stops a year ago on the left side and currently on the right side. As we've looked at this, the conclusions we've drawn, you can see on the left side, first of all, you notice the volume difference in just a number of trips, but very clearly on the left side, definitely the top three stops there are associated with the U of O, some of the others down the way are related to that. But when you compare that to the top 10 stops on fixed route that we're seeing today, it's a real different story. And the south side of Wagner, east of Cubitt, if you're not familiar with that, that's right across the street from Winco. And so a lot of transit use there. That stop is also a big stop just for people using the 41 and going into town. So again, a lot of use there. The west side of Highway 99 north is another big one, again, in that same kind of northwest part of town. Springfield, main west of 58th, another big one. And I mean, you can look at these and see, I mean, they're very different from the ridership patterns we see when the U of O is here and LCC, and you know, the students represent over half of our ridership, and so when that's gone and other you're down to your essential trip making, what you see on the right side is how people are using the system. I'm just going to touch on the MX stops and how those have changed. Again, you notice the volumes, though compared to our regular service, the MX volumes are still very high. And you can see, I mean, there's been some change in more shifting around of stations here, but kind of what you'd expect. So that's what I have. Are there any questions?
Yes, Caitlin, go ahead.
Oh, mine's just an observation that I just always think this is interesting. So thanks for sharing it. I'm not surprised about Cubitt Street. That's where I live. And there's Winco and the Rite Aid Pharmacy and Oregon mm-hmm. Medical Group and Peace Health. And it's just like this absolute lifeblood in that area. So I just wasn't surprised to see such a high ridership over there because there's really essential services and it's been really busy over in that area. But thanks for sharing. Sure. This.
Thanks.
I'm going to put myself in the queue, but I'll go ahead and let other people go first. Josh and then Don.
Muted.
There we go. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Carl. Yeah, this is great, Tom, as always. I'm super impressed and really grateful that we have kind of real-time analytics. I love that the last day on some of those graphs is yesterday, so that's kind of cool. I have just one comment and then three quick questions. The comment is just, I guess I want to emphasize, 4,000 boardings a day is still a lot and really important to the community, no doubt. So these are surely truly essential trips. So quick questions. I am a little concerned about the 20 passenger or 15 passenger limit on some of those graphs and the fact that we seem to be, I know you sort of addressed this, but I just want to hear what we're doing on enforcement, because it seems like in some ways these should be, there should be zero trips with loads over 20. And these just feel really far from zero. And I wonder if you can just say a little bit more about how we're navigating that. And if we have any data giving specifics on what you were saying about, it's just for a few blocks or a couple of stops as places are leaving stations. Second, on ride source, I'm wondering if we know, just because these trips feel disproportionately, even in regular times, to be essential trips, I'm curious if we know any more about the extent to which the people who traditionally have used RideSource more and are now not using it or yet not using it as much, to the extent to which they're dealing with hardship and isolation and whether we should be thinking about other strategies. Seeing RideSource trips go down a lot for a short period is one thing, but for, a really extended period feels different to me. And then also, I'll just put out there, I don't know if everyone has heard this, but since our last meeting a week ago, the U of O has announced that it will definitely proceed with some form of in-person fall quarter, so starting at the very end of September. And so I'm curious if there's any thought about strategizing for that. Thanks.
Well, so let's take the questions in the order you asked them. And the first one with respect to loads, maybe Mark, you want to take that one?
Yeah. So, and we have been watching loads. So, and we actually decided that, for the certain areas between, let's say, 5th and Monroe and the Eugene Station, where there may be over the capacity, the 15 and 20. And, other than just saying, no, we're just not going to pick up anymore, which we do in certain areas. Well, for those instances, it's a short period of time, we'll get them there and call it good. It really is judgment call. The rest of the system, we are watching it closer. But as it gets closer to downtown where you get a few more concentrations of people, we've decided not to.
And I believe the next question you asked was about RideSource, I believe. And I think, unless someone else has an answer, I guess I want to come back to you with more on that.
Okay.
In terms of what's going on with folks, unless someone else has an answer.
Is it the question about the U of O that you want to come, Tom?
No, it was the ride source, low level ride source use.
I do believe in my conversations with Seth Cosette, she mentioned that that's a population that's a lot more vulnerable. Level of service that we have there, it's very different. It does require front door boarding. We do know that people are just choosing to take less rides, and places that they are going to are also not accessible at this time. So we know that the only people riding are absolutely only essential trips, and that is exactly what we're only encouraging at this time. So it's and that's on both our fixed route and our paratransit. We're only encouraging and really asking people to only take essential trips. So we think that's a contributing factor as well.
Yeah, yeah, maybe I should clarify. Oh, Tom, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, John Allen just texted me. So RideSource is declined usage due to people choosing to stay home and us insisting that people only ride for urgent and essential needs.
Yep, which is the same thing.
With
us. You know, sorry to step into this, to cut corners or cut in line, but one of my questions was regarding this, which was, are we anticipating at some point in the future that there's a built up like medical need or other kinds of essential, similar kinds of essential trips that'll kind of hit us?
Well, I think there's only so much capacity in the medical offices as well. So, you know, and usually they're at capacity under normal times or close to it. So, you know, whether we just go back to where we were and you know, not, it, we'll see, but I think that's probably what'll happen.
Okay. Yeah, anecdotally, I got a note from my dentist saying they're open next week and to start making, so we may be seeing some other trips like that.
Great. I think you have one more question to answer for Josh.
Yeah, for the with respect to the UVO, yeah, we were aware of the UVO's plans and we've, you know, looking at different scenarios for how to be prepared to adapt to service. We did look at a scenario where the UVO comes on in the fall. So we're prepared. We know how to serve the campus. I think the interesting thing to monitor is, you know, how many students are going to be on campus at that point. Because again, like I said, over 50% of our ridership comes from the students, and we'll want to monitor, I think, our level of service based on what we see.
Great. Thanks, Tom. Josh, did you get all the answers you needed on that one?
Just about, I guess, one clarification, but we can come back to this later. And I heard what AJ said about the RideSource crowd, and Tom, I heard the clarification from John Allen. But I guess what I'm thinking is, if this group of people was already doing more, I assume, disproportionately essential trips to start with, and if there's been a big ratcheting back, I want to make sure that we're not kind of pushing people away from trips that are right at the edge of essential, especially if these are more transit dependent and vulnerable populations. You all have probably read as well that there's now been, there's actually been this very noticeable effect nationwide where a lot of people are deferring medical care, but sometimes fairly serious medical care, simply because of increased risk of going out and especially going to medical offices or medical facilities. There's been a huge drop in the number of people showing up with serious heart conditions. And so there's this worry that over time, people who should still seek medical care are not going to do it out of fear. And so I want to make sure that if the typical RideSource format is not sufficiently safe or doesn't at least feel sufficiently safe to that crowd, that we are thinking about what other sort of safety net service for that crowd we need to have, especially if we were to have a serious spike in infections around here, but even just in the current situation. So let me just raise that concern for now, and if we can talk about it later, that would be great.
I've received comments from both Cosette and John to make sure folks know that we allow RideSource users to self-select what's essential and not essential.
Great, that's helpful for now, thank you.
Great, thanks. Thanks, Tom and Josh. Don, go ahead.
Well, it's just kind of my confusion of looking at, well, on page 61, that figure 2 where it says comparison of top stop locations of one date and then the year earlier. There's really only a couple of those that compare, right? Is that, I mean, the other ones don't compare, they don't match up. So it's, well, that's confusing to me.
Okay, well, let me try and clarify. No, what we were doing was a top 10 list currently and last year. And so we didn't expect them to match up kind of across the lines. It was more a year ago, the top fixed route station was, oops, sorry. There we go. Was the U of O Station Bay F. A year later, under the pandemic, the top stop location on our on our fixed route service is the south side of Wagner, east of Cubitt. So that's how to read.
Okay, I can. Yeah. I was confused, but I mean, I see the one on Wagner and Cubitt for the previous year is 3,000. So I can see. Well, it's a big drop, but I didn't see any relationship with the University Station. And okay, I was confused about how they were the chart was supposed to read.
Sure. Sure.
Good clarification question there. My question really quick, Tom, was just was there any reports or were there any reports from operators about any kind of issues or problems with riders or non-essential trips or any other safety concerns?
Mark?
Yeah, so we've increased the number of public safety officers. So we have hired some private security to kind of help monitor stations where we've been having problems, and that's helped. And so we haven't seen any major problems. I think we've got it pretty well under control.
Good deal. Thank you. I just want to make sure there weren't any other new things that were popping up or things that were still going on. Appreciate your work on that. Any other quick comments or questions before we go to the end of our meeting? Okay, thank you very much, everyone, for hanging with me. I know I'm almost 18 minutes over. So seeing there are no other items on the agenda, I'm going to go ahead and adjourn. So thank you very much to the board members, and thank you everyone else in the public for joining us today. And please stay safe, and we will see you next week. Thank you very much.
Thank you.